Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with John Greenwald Jr. as we talk about UFOs, government secrets, information, and so much more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, John Greenwald Jr. with us, of course. John, tell us that story of a UFO document with the Air Force. What was that?
Yeah, I thought that years ago when I was kind of searching around, trying to figure out where these UFO records were.
Or surfing around.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking to myself that maybe there was some type of a manual that had talked about, you know, UFOs and how to report them. And after researching it for really over the course of a couple years, I had discovered an Air Force instruction that was called 10-206. And in this particular Air Force instruction that it mandated all Air Force pilots to adhere to, they were to report certain types of objects that they may see in the sky, and they had a kind of a short list of if they saw a missile that they couldn't readily identify, meaning it wasn't connected to a launch or a training exercise, they would report that, or any unidentified aircraft or military jet to report that. But on this short list was unidentified flying objects. And for me, because this manual was dated well into the 2000s, it was kind of that black and white proof that the Air Force was still interested in whatever UFOs were. Now the question was, what was the definition? So to kind of summarize the couple-year journey of trying to get these documents out, I had read through the manual, figured out where they were being sent to, and they were being sent to the NORAD installation at Peterson Air Force Base. And so I filed a FOIA request, and that's how I found out the hard way that the receiving end of whatever these UFO reports were being seen by our own military pilots were being sent to an agency that was not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. And it took me about a year to figure out, you know, how can I get these documents? And in that same letter, NORAD said, in good faith — I never understood what this term means, but the government uses it a lot — in good faith, we searched for documents that may pertain to your request, and we found nothing. So essentially, they denied that they had any of these types of reports. And I was able to go through the Canadian government and find out that they do, in fact, have these UFO records. And the reason why NORAD is not subject to the U.S. Freedom of Information Act is because it's also partially under Canadian control. I didn't know that at the time, but that's why the FOIA didn't apply. But I went through it a different way and went through what's called the Access to Information Act, and that's a Canadian law, and called the Canadian government, namely the Department of National Defense, and talked to the guy on the telephone. And I didn't tell him my name. I didn't tell him why I was calling in regards to these UFO records. I just simply asked, could I request as a U.S. citizen information under the Access to Information Act? And he kind of thought for a second, and he said, yeah, sure, I don't see why not if the documents have been released before. So then I started explaining what I was looking for. And these particular reports were called service reports. So the acronym was CIRVIS. And I really just got, well, sir, I'm looking for these service reports. It stands for Communication Instructions for Reporting Vital Intelligence Sightings. That was what the acronym stood for. I didn't even get out the entire sentence when he interrupted me and he says, oh, I have them right here. And it caught me so off guard because, again, this was an office in the Department of National Defense, and this is the guy that answered the telephone. This was not a UFO office. I was not forwarded because, you know, I was a UFO requester. This was just the guy that answered the phone. And I ended up getting a copy of those UFO documents and posted them on the blackvault.com. You can download them all. But it was irrefutable proof that the NORAD installation, in good faith, whatever that meant, when they looked for these UFO documents and said they couldn't find them, the Canadian government proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that they were there, that they were channeled through the NORAD installation, that they were collecting these UFO records. Now, I wouldn't say that there was any earth-shattering evidence, meaning, you know, this was the smoking gun connecting UFO and the UFO phenomena to aliens, but it showed that this deepened the lie, that it deepened the cover-up. So to quickly conclude it, I had spoken about this in quite a few different lectures and had even worked it into a History Channel documentary that I had written. But when the Huffington Post and Lee Spiegel decided to do a story on myself in the Black Vault, he asked a very commonly asked question, you know, what are the most important documents? And so I went through and gave him a list of a few, and Air Force Instruction 10-206 was on that list. And he did what any good journalist would do. He called the Pentagon for a comment because this showed that well into the 2000s they were interested. And he didn't get a call back. And I showed Lee how to download this particular manual from the Air Force itself to show him, hey, look, I'm not making this up. This isn't something that's a leaked document or anything. Here's the Air Force's website, and here's how you can get it. So he had a deadline, and after not getting a call back, he goes back online, goes to the site that I sent him to, re-downloads it, and the chapter on UFOs was completely gone. Within 48 hours of the Huffington Post inquiry to the Pentagon, they had completely rewritten Air Force Instruction 10-206, and Chapter 5, the one that dealt with unidentified flying objects, whatever they are, was completely omitted. And
they're deleted. Quick, John, aren't they? They're quick.
Wow. What a coincidence. Now, they eventually returned his call and said, well, that was just a coincidence. We were updating it. But my research can prove that they updated it quite a few times through 2004, 2005, 2008, 2009. UFOs stood in it every single time. And yet when the Huffington Post did an inquiry specifically asking about it, then it was, we were going to take that out, and it was gone.
So tell us a little bit about this database that you're working on, the case file databases, because you want people to contribute and help, don't you?
I do, yeah. And over the years, I was getting a lot of reports on UFOs from people all over the world, and I didn't know what to do with them, and I would forward them to a couple different organizations, and they kind of disappeared, and I wanted to kind of know follow-ups and so on. And so I started what was called the case file database that started archiving what people were sending me, and then it kind of has grown from there as a research tool for people to not only submit their cases, but submit their research. And I also kind of deal with what I think is becoming an epidemic in this day and age of the hoaxes that are out there, and kind of profiling what shouldn't be out there as quote unquote real, and kind of proving what these hoaxes are as well. So it's kind of a more of a research tool for investigators like myself and those out there to not only contribute their own sightings, but also use it as a reference tool. And it's grown considerably since I started it. So later this year, and I haven't really talked about this at all, actually, but later this year, what I'm doing is I'm putting together a team of people where there's no membership fees, there's no politics involved. It's just a team of investigators that are curious and like-minded, that want to know the truth, and that want to look into some of these cases, look at the photos, look at the videos, because there are a large amount of amazingly smart people out there, much smarter than myself, when it comes to video analysis and photograph analysis. And so I want to kind of put together a team of looking into these cases and completely unbiased way of trying to profile them. And I'm also working on and just about to finish and release what I feel is kind of an update to what has been known as the Hynek classification system of classifying UFOs, but more so making it a 21st century, not only classification, but rating system, and develop different levels of how well can case A stand up to the test, and what is the source of it? What can you determine by the photograph or the video? Do an analysis, but there's like multiple levels of a rating system to essentially then start separating these cases into the important ones, the ones that do deserve a closer look, and those that are still maybe important and unexplained, but maybe not so high on the scale where it just gets lost. And that's what I'm kind of looking to do, which, although there's a lot of UFO sites out there and a lot of quote-unquote UFO databases and stuff like that, I'm not trying to take away anything from those great resources. What I'm trying to do is then essentially accumulate the more important cases and develop a rating system that will allow those that want to know more about the topic the ability, give them the ability to easily find those cases. So I kind of put that out there to your listeners, too. I mean, if anybody's interested, by all means, sure, contact me at theblackvault.com, because I'm definitely interested in kind of finalizing this team and getting this project going. I think it's definitely needed, and we need to get through some of these YouTube, I won't name anybody, but some of these YouTube channels and websites that constantly put out these cases that are kind of on the verge of just being silly, and they're easily proven as hoaxes, that we need to get beyond that and start really kind of weeding through it and figuring out what the real evidence truly is.
John, did you ever come across any documents by the late J. Allen Hynek when he was the Project Blue Book consultant?
Well, away from the Project Blue Book documents, yeah, I found some fun stuff to give a side of J. Allen Hynek that we don't really see a lot on a lot of astronomical papers that he wrote, not on UFOs, but rather some of his astronomy background and the research that he had done. And I got those declassified. They'd never been seen before outside of the U.S. government, and Hynek was the author of them. So I did find some Hynek material. I even have Hynek's FBI file, and it's a very interesting look in the man himself. They were doing a background check, and they were doing some investigation into who and what Hynek was all about. And so it's amazing to kind of look at that, because you realize, you know, how important that man really was, and then you learn the bigger picture of him, whereas, you know, again, starting as a skeptic and then going through the Project Blue Book era and realizing there was a lot more to the topic. He was an amazing individual and scientist, so it was very fun for me to kind of see those documents come out. Again, the scientific papers that he had authored that had never been declassified before, that was a really fun find. And then obviously his FBI file as well, that really profiled who he was. Because when they do those background checks, they look into everything.
Oh, yeah.
Scary. You know, they talk to your friends, your family. I mean, they do the whole nine yards. So it's kind of neat to get into that and see who Hynek really was.
All right, let's go to the phones now, Dan in Montrose, New York. Welcome to the program. Good morning, Dan.
Thank you very much for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
No sooner that I turn around, I say thank God for History Channel 1 and 2, History 2 being most of the UFO information, not that I would agree on everything, but no sooner I turn around and bam, I find out that History Channel 2 has been taken off the air.
And now we've moved to History Channel 1 again.
Pardon me?
We've moved back to History Channel 1 with Ancient Aliens.
Oh, you are on History Channel 1.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because I was saying that I believed that the possibility that the government was behind taking the whole show off because Ancient Aliens...
No, no, it's back on. It's on. It's never been
and
off.
Hang on one.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah, we're there. History Channel decided to put us back because the ratings have been so high for that show. They wanted us back on the full History Channel, and they did that. And, John, you've been on that show.
Yeah, I've been on quite a few. And actually, Dan's question actually goes to a bigger-rooted one where the question often asked to me, because I've worked directly with this network quite a bit on different UFO shows, is there this kind of push to not go too far with the programming? In my experience, I do not have a single example of that. That the networks are great when you produce a UFO documentary, they just want a good show and they want a good story. And as long as you do your job right, I think that you can get a lot of great UFO information out there. I produce quite a few. We'll stick with History Channel since Dan was talking about that specifically, but produce quite a few for History that had a lot of great information, got a lot of praise from the UFO community itself. But I think when it comes to the networks, I don't think that there's a grand conspiracy to really cover up the UFO documentary. I think in documentaries and the information, I think that if you tell a good story, the networks want that. That's what they want to see from people like us that make the TV show, and they allow us to do just that. So we've got some great stuff online. I went on to produce UFO Hunters. Obviously, Ancient Aliens has a lot of great stuff. You know, as long as you tell a good story, I don't think that there's a cover-up to essentially make it go away.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Christian's turn from Nebraska. Hello, Christian.
Hey, George. How are you doing?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Awesome. Hey, I'm a longtime listener, and I just wanted to make a quick point and then ask a question.
Okay.
The point was, about the past 30 years now, I'll be turning 50 at the end of the month. But the last 30 years, I've been doing a lot of research on many different topics. And one of the topics that keeps coming up, and for some reason keeps coming full circle, is this interdimensional travel,
mm-hmm.
where people are seeing, people that I've talked to have exclaimed seeing everything from aliens to shadow people, so on and so forth. And what sparked this on for me was the fact that I actually had an encounter with what I would call a shadow spirit of sorts. And it's a little lengthy story, but I won't get into it. But my question is this. If the government is got the Freedom of Information Act and they're releasing these documents that are obviously parts of them are all blacked out due to, you know, top secret or classified information, I think that in my own side of researching things and checking things out, I would actually want to start there, because that would tell me that they've got something there that they don't want the public to see. So there is something being hid. But the question is, is there, and I don't know the answer, this is why I'm asking, is there a strict amount of time where anyone can get this information, or is it like, you know, 10 years after it's been filed with the government, they put it into the so-called X-Files, pardon the pun on the TV show, but to where it is inaccessible completely. And what I just heard a few minutes ago about information being between, say, NORAD and Canada, I didn't even know that.
That's a good question. When does the information go online, John, or become available, if you ask for it?
To be honest with you, there's really kind of no set time. I think that there's certain laws and procedures that they've tried to implement that after, let's say, 30 years, you know, information is up for declassification. But I'll be honest with you, I have found, and I'm not exaggerating, I have found classified documents that date from World War One, and so when you think about that, you know, think about how long ago World War One is. What is still classified? I use that as just kind of the proof that there's no set time that essentially information can stay classified for decades and decades until somebody essentially requests it or, you know, knows that it's there. Now, there are some PR campaigns, I'm going to say it this way, and I'm hoping it doesn't come off wrong, but there are those PR campaigns where the government may declassify something. The CIA had declassified a lot of secrets that I do think that tied into some FOIA requests that were sent into the CIA, but the CIA willingly put a big batch of material that they termed as the Family Jewels collection that really outlined a lot of the secrets of the CIA. So there are times where they may willingly give information out to kind of show transparency and try and give the public some kind of comfort that they're being open with them. But those releases are very rare. So there's no set time. You just got to go after the information, request it, and then that's when the government reviews it.
Okay, hold on, John. We're at the break. We're going to come back with final phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Stanley Cohen joins us. We're going to be talking about convicting the innocent and then, of course, open lines on Coast to Coast AM, and we've got a full great week of programs in store for you for the rest of the week as well. And welcome back. It's our final segment with John Greenwald Jr. here as we take your phone calls as well, talking about his incredible research, searching out documents, looking for freedom of information, classified information that has been declassified, on UFOs and other related topics as well. John, before we go to final calls, got to ask you about the JFK situation and some of the things you uncovered there.
Well, in relation to the assassination or?
Yes.
Well, that's a tough one. And the reason is there are literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pages when it comes to the JFK assassination. And obviously there's a large chunk of them that are still classified. I know that there was a large group of documents that were supposed to be released quite a few years ago now, and the government has kind of blown through that date and has extended it. So, unfortunately, as of now, they're kind of stonewalling the general public. And I think that that's one of the tactics, not only with the JFK assassination, but a lot of these other topics, that they will let so much time elapse that the interest essentially starts to die out. You have a certain age group of people that are interested in those types of topics, push for information. But as the decades kind of tick away, you're kind of losing that generation, and then the next one may not care as much, and that history will be either destroyed or forgotten. I'm a history buff, so I love stuff like this, but information on the Watergate scandal. And really, yeah, it was pretty controversial at the time, but really there shouldn't be, in my opinion, a whole lot that's still classified about that. At least maybe that's just the way I'm thinking. The CIA informed me that 100% of their investigation into Watergate is still classified, and they won't release a single page.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And I appealed it and asked for the title page. I asked for the table of contents to their report. It was by the CIA Office of the Inspector General. And they do have a report that they admit that it's there, but they will not release it. 100% of it is classified. So although not as fascinating as some of the UFO stuff we've been talking about, that in itself, though, it, again, just kind of plays a role in the bigger picture. That what is it that they're hiding about some of these topics that they don't want us to know? And it really does, at the end of the day, make you scratch your head and think, well, what's really there? What are they not telling us? And politicians want to give this aura of transparency. And I'm not even going to single out just Obama, but Obama did it. Bush did it. Clinton did it. They all want to give these pledges of transparency. But at the end of the day, they're not really releasing all that much. And it goes to that difference between what do they say at the press podiums and what does the actual action say. And in most of those cases, it completely contradicts itself.
Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Wayne. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, George.
Hi there.
John, wanted you can find out if you were able to get any good solid information on the people that came over from Operation Paperclip and all of the UFO information that was supposed to come over from Nazi Germany, including supposedly them trading information on setting off the nuclear bomb so we could use it in Hiroshima.
Well, that's a hefty question. Well, we'll deal with the paperclip stuff first. Yeah, I did get a lot of documents on paperclip declassified. If you search the search engine there on theblackvault.com just for paperclip, you'll come up with a lot of documents that I got from the CIA. So there's hundreds of pages to read there. In relation to the UFO technology that the Nazis had, I think a lot of stuff stayed on the drawing boards. I don't think that a lot of stuff was put into production now. I will say, again, this is a whole different show in itself, but very quickly, I think that the Nazi scientists, even prior to Paperclip, before the end of the war, had technology that was so, it's frightening how advanced that this stuff was, that if Hitler actually put this stuff into production...
Oh, they would have won the war.
Absolutely, you and I would be speaking German right now, and I think that it's a terrifying situation there. In regards to like the flying saucers, I mean, yeah, I think that there were a lot of designs. I wouldn't say that some of that stuff, at least the evidence isn't there, that it came over. I will bring up a batch of documents that were declassified from the United States Army that I had requested UFO information, and they sent me hundreds of pages. But not on UFOs, but it was in response to my request on UFOs. It was a little bizarre, but it was all about the flying saucer or flying wing design by the Horton brothers, and they kind of nicknamed it a flying saucer, and that's why it came up under my request for UFO information. So although it wasn't what I was looking for, it was still fascinating history. So it showed that our military was definitely looking into what the Nazi and Nazi scientists were doing. And the Horton brothers, who made the original flying wing design, I mean, Jack Northrop gets credit for it, but it was actually the Horton brothers that I think if you look on a calendar, did it quite a few years prior with their flying wing design. So there's a lot of documents that are declassified about Nazi technology. Again, not necessarily those flying saucer things that we like to hear about, but some pretty advanced material.
Did you come across anything about Admiral Byrd in that trip, that supposed trip into the center of the planet?
Yeah, the one that was down in Antarctica?
Yes.
Yeah, I did actually get quite a few documents on that. And, you know, I think it was Operation High Jump. It's almost 2 in the morning, so forgive me if I have that wrong, but I believe it was High Jump that you're referencing, where they went down and sent, like, the biggest group of military warships down into the Antarctic. And, you know, who knows why the real reason was when they went down there. I think that there's a lot in that operation that we don't know. I will say that I found a fascinating letter that was sent to the, it was actually in that batch of records from the Army. And the short of it was that it was from Hitler's high-up general. It was written in 1947, so obviously after Hitler had committed suicide, World War II was over. Although tensions were still pretty hot, essentially the war was done. But this this handwritten letter in German, which was translated by the Army, had essentially said that Hitler was alive and well, that he was in a specially designed U-boat off the coast of Antarctica. There were V-2 silos with nuclear-tipped warheads on it aimed at New York, aimed at Great Britain and a couple other key targets in Europe. Now, the V-2, I don't think would have hit America, but there, you know, that's what this letter had kind of gone in and said. And I did quite a few FOIA requests to every intelligence agency out there to see if in 1947, what did they do with this letter? Because, again, we're not talking about, you know, 1985 or anything. This was freshly after World War II. Hitler has a very extensive FBI file where, although the Soviets said Hitler was dead and they showed dental records to prove it, there was still a question mark, and Hitler's FBI file proved that they looked for him for many, many years. So when I found this letter, filed requests to every agency out there, and it came up with no records across the board. Essentially, the government either is lying or they didn't take that letter seriously, which is kind of a scary implication when you really sit down and think about it. The reason High Jump always comes up in this is, was this something that connected somehow to some secret Nazi installation, military-wise, that was down there? So the documents don't really go into that part of it, but obviously that's what the conspiracy is in relation to High Jump. But I've got quite a few reports on it that you can download and read on High Jump. I've got an extensive section on it.
Let's go to the phones again. Art in Tennessee. Good morning, Art.
Art?
Still with us?
Hi.
Nope, I guess not. Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Wayne, it's your turn.
Yes, you mentioned the Horton brothers. Actually, they designed and used a commercial plane in Argentina, I understand, for a number of years, and for some reason they quit using that. I don't know what the story is behind that, but maybe you have some information.
Well, that actually is new to me, although I will say that I haven't spent a ton of time looking into specifically the Horton brothers. I just got that batch of material, which I believe is everything that the Army has. But that's interesting. That's kind of new to me. I'm not sure what plane you're talking about in Argentina.
John, if you were looking for something specific, let's say the Socorro, New Mexico case of Lonnie Zamora, how would you enter that to look for that?
Well, when it comes to UFO stuff, anything in the time frame of 1947 to 1969 is probably in the Project Blue Book material.
Okay.
And Zamora's particular case is. And so that's kind of easy to pinpoint down, because that we know is within the time frame of Blue Book, and you can find those case files there. The UFO incidents that have happened outside, and I now have confirmation, and I'm still researching this. I don't even have it on theblackvault.com yet because I don't have a resolution to it, but I'll bring it up quickly with you, is that I do have confirmation that at least on two occasions, the United States Navy has seen unidentified objects in the water. And so I'm trying to get those documents out right now, but I do have confirmation that there are documents there, but they may be classified. And those types of cases are a lot harder to kind of get a hold of, because if the government doesn't freely admit to them, how do you know to request it? You know, some agencies will take that broad request. It goes back to earlier in the program when you asked me, you know, how do you do a FOIA request? Well, if you do it too broad, meaning give me everything on USOs or UFOs or whatever it might be, that some agencies will reject that. So if they reject it, how do you know what UFO cases to request if they've never been released before? You know, and that's where that gets very, very tricky and very difficult, because if they won't take the broad request, then you, I guess, have to kind of guess. You got to really figure out if there's any references to a case or a sighting, and then just kind of keep following the paper trail to try and get it. And it's tricky, because when the government takes sometimes months or years to respond, it can be a long time before you get information. In fact, I've waited, my record is about 14 years for a document to come for a FOIA, from a FOIA request.
14, you've got patience.
Well, to be honest with you, I forgot about it.
It just showed up one day, right?
It just showed up, and they said, you know, this is in response to your request. I forget what the exact day, but it was 14 years prior to when I was reading it. And the document itself wasn't all that interesting, but I wrote an article not on that document, but what happened in the 14 years while I was waiting for that. It got published in quite a few places because, again, it wasn't about the material they sent me. It was about what happened and what transpired during that 14 years, and how many politicians came in and into office and out of office, and what happened in the White House, and so on and so forth. And when you really, again, I hate to use the same term, but when you sit down and really start to digest that, you really can conclude that the government is hiding an awful lot about this information. And one tactic that they're doing now that I would urge any requester out there to watch out for is, after a certain time has elapsed, now they will send you a letter that says, well, since 3 years, 4 years, 5 years has passed, please let us know if you're still interested. If not, we'll automatically close the request. And so sometimes you'll wait years for a response, and if you don't keep on top of every single letter that comes in, because they just operate off the assumption that you're not interested anymore, they'll just close your request. So it's okay for them to take 14 years to respond to you, but if you take 14 days to respond to them, it may be too late, and you got to refile and start over.
Jeez.
And so it's you got to stay on top of it, because they're pulling out some tricks that are not fun to deal with.
Alex is in Rochester, New Hampshire. Hello, Alex. Good morning to you, sir.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
In regards to UFOs, I had a comment and I had a question about that for your guest, John Greenwald.
All right.
Given that the data you've collected from FOIA and other methods seems to point to and suggest that the U.S. government is maintaining a cover-up about the UFO issue,
mm-hmm.
And given that the alleged UFO technology is apparently superior to ours or to known human technology, it would seem to me to indicate that only one of two scenarios are possible. One is the beings or intelligences who are piloting and controlling the UFOs want to maintain their secrecy well into the future, and the U.S. government has figured this out and can count on that so that it can maintain its cover-up. Or two, the U.S. government is in collusion or cahoots with the ETs, because otherwise the ETs could just show up and the U.S. government would lose face. Do you agree with that?
Well, let's deal with the first part first. Yeah, I think you're spot on with the information that you get when it comes to the documents proves, in my opinion, beyond any shadow of a doubt, there is a cover-up going on. Now, the question is, well, what are they covering up? Obviously, it's UFO information. Obviously, the military can't essentially identify these things, because they wouldn't be UFOs if they could. So it's just, again, using a little bit of common sense. The second part of your statement's then going a little bit farther. And this leads into, in my opinion, a whole different topic whatsoever about, you know, government collusion with AETs and do they not want to be seen by us and so on and so forth. And I'll just kind of quickly pose this question, that if there really are intelligent civilizations out there, when you look at the intelligence gap between human race here in the 21st century and an intelligent civilization in the cosmos that has had, let's say, a 50,000 or 100,000 years, even a million year head start, the question that I personally wrestle with is, would they care if we're here? Now, the first part of, you know, your scenario, I do not think would probably be plausible, because do you really think that they would care if we knew that they were there? The second part is more plausible for me, wherein the government, you know, essentially wants to keep the public in the dark for multiple reasons. I brought it up earlier in the program, where I think a large part of the public couldn't handle such a disclosure. And so I think that to me, is a little bit more plausible. But again, I wrestle with that whole intelligence gap thing. I need to see things to believe it, and that's just a personal belief, and I've never seen it. So I'm still kind of on the fence investigating it, and I do wrestle with that question, that if they can travel light years across, you know, would they care essentially about the human race? And you look at the intelligence gap between an ant and us, and then us and an intelligent civilization, and we are closer to an ant. And there's not many people on the planet that want to go out to an anthill and plant a flag and say, we're here, and we're going to share our computers and silicon chips, and you know, here's how you look into DNA and so on and so forth.
We're their personal little ant farm, John, to be sure. Hey, thanks for being on the program. John Greenwald, Jr., all his information linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.